regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards, but pretty sure you know that by now. Thanks very much for tuning in. We're going to be talking with Michael O'Neill, Vice President of the Rhode Island Second Amendment Coalition, here in just a moment or two. The Rhode Island House voting today on a sweeping gun ban bill, and unfortunately, majority of the House signed on as co-sponsors. There is a little doubt about what is going to happen here, but that's a different story when it comes to the upper chamber. So we're going to get into this with Michael O'Neill. This, by the way, I'm not saying that today's vote is the result of the Supreme Court turning away Snope, but it certainly didn't help. Because the architect of this ban, Representative, I think his name is Representative Peter Knight, told Rhode Island Press that, you know, he was asked basically, like, well, why don't you just hold off here, given the constitutional concerns about this? And he said, well, you know, the Supreme Court had the chance to weigh in and they didn't. So they've basically said that these kinds of bans are okay. Now, that's not what Brett Kavanaugh said in his statement, but that is the takeaway. Frankly, for, you know, a lot of anti-gun activists. Well, the Supreme Court didn't step in and halt Maryland's ban. They didn't agree to hear that case. They're going to keep Maryland's ban on the book. So why shouldn't we move forward with our own ban in the meantime? Even if Brett Kavanaugh says, well, we'll likely take up this issue in a term or two. That is a short-term green light for the anti-gunners. And we are seeing this play out in Rhode Island. Now, again, I don't think that even if Snope had been accepted, that the Democrats of Rhode Island would have put a halt to the progress for this bill, at least in the House. Now, again, the Senate, I think, is another matter, and that's something we do get into in our conversation with Michael O'Neill. In fact, let's go ahead and get to it. Take a look and a listen. Michael, thanks very much for coming on the program today. I know it's a busy and likely a bitterly disappointing day for gun owners in Rhode Island here.
Yes, sir, it is. We have an assault weapons ban bill that's going to be voted on the House floor, and it's going to pass. So
yeah,
that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, a majority of House members are co-signers. They've endorsed this legislation. So as you say, it's kind of a fait accompli in the House, but it does not mean that this bill is guaranteed to get to Governor Dan McKee's desk, right?
That is true. So we have the Senate. We're working the Senate pretty hard. We're seeing if we can, you know, convince some people that are on the cusp of it and try and bring them over to our side, saying, because this bill is ridiculous. I mean, you're talking 3,600 guns that'll be banned. That's pistols, revolvers, shotguns. It's not an assault weapons ban. It's a firearm ban altogether. It's like a confiscation as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, so let's talk about the particulars of this, because from what I understand, this is not your grandfather's assault weapons ban, right? It doesn't just define quote unquote assault weapon based on features. This basically encompasses all gas operated semi-automatic rifles and shotguns that can accept a detachable magazine, right? I mean, it's defined that broadly.
Yeah, so it gets into, say, for an example, like I carry a Glock 17.
Okay.
Now, we already have a magazine ban in Rhode Island, but the Glock 17, as you know, comes standard with a 17-round magazine.
Right.
So I'm running 10-round magazines in them. But what happens is, because in the wording, if it can accept a higher capacity magazine, which is the 17-round, then that gun is illegal. Yes.
Okay. So this does not just apply to semi-automatic rifles and shotguns. That would apply to basically any semi-automatic handgun that could accept a magazine with more than 10 rounds?
Yes, sir.
Wow. So, I mean, this is essentially a semi-auto ban.
Yes, sir. If you have a shotgun, like you shoot trap
and
Remington 1100, and at the end, you know, they always have a threaded barrel because it chokes. So, you know, you can change what choke size you want for whatever it is you're doing, hunting or trap shooting. Because of that threaded barrel portion, that is now an assault weapons ban. It's an assault weapon. So, yeah. So this bill goes way past what it's supposed to.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, listen, this is not the first time you guys have had to deal with some pretty blatant infringements on our right to keep and bear arms. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court turned down OSHA Say Tactical versus Nerona, which was a challenge to the magazine ban that you referenced earlier. That ban required existing owners to either get rid of those magazines or basically become criminals, right?
Right. They could modify them or they could have to give them up. So
What kind of language is there for existing owners in this semi-auto ban, Bill?
So what you can, two things you can do. You can, in Rhode Island, 1147 is a law that says you cannot make a registry. Okay.
Okay.
What they have, so that was a big deal because it's against the law. So they went from a registry to voluntarily go down to the police station, bring your firearms. They'll list your firearms. They'll fingerprint you. Then they'll give you a certificate that you proved that before June 1st or July 1st of 2026 that you own these firearms. So they're saying it's not a registry. First of all, as soon as your prints, they're going to run your prints for a background check, right?
Right.
So that's going in the FBI. That's going in the NICS. It's going in the local police departments. Your prints are there. I mean, I work for major airlines, so I have custom badges. So my fingerprints are everywhere.
Okay.
You know, that's just the way it is.
Right.
Well, you know, ex-military. So, but they keep all that information. They say they destroy it after you leave, but they don't destroy anything. They don't. They'll keep it as a registry, and that's how it is. So it's not really. It's trying to put you where you go there so you feel safe because you have to, according to the law, you have to prove, like if you get pulled over, you have to prove that you own that gun prior to 2026. I think it's the opposite. You need to prove that I bought it after 2026.
Right.
That's how I look at it. You know, I mean, you can sit there and use your phone and take a picture of every single firearm you have, and it's going to have a date, time, and stamp.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You show the serial number, you put that in your file. That's what I'm going to do. And do an inventory, have it notarized, and put that in a safe deposit box. So, you know, that's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do my own inventory and produce my own evidence. And they can try and tell me, hey, you know what? You bought this after 2026. I'm like, prove it because you have no proof. You know, they can't prove that they bought it if they didn't buy it after 2026. And it's, if it's going to be illegal to sell in 2026, where's that person getting it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's, I mean, this is so egregious to me, along with the magazine ban and some of the other stuff that you guys have dealt with. I saw a story yesterday that talked about how a ban on these semi-automatic firearms is the only recommendation that has not been adopted into law that was made after the Parkland shooting in 2018. I guess there was some working group that said, "Of you know, we got to put these gun control laws in place in Rhode Island." And I went and I looked at the homicide rate in Rhode Island going back to 2019, and you know, honestly, there are not a lot of murders in Rhode Island each and every year, so even a difference of one or two can cause that you know, statistic to vary pretty wildly. But there really hasn't been a huge change. I think there were 25 homicides in Rhode Island in 2019. There were 28 in 2023. So, you know, all of these things are presented as must-haves from a public safety standpoint. They don't seem to have done much to impact violent crime. They seem to do a heck of a lot to impact the rights of lawful gun owners like yourself, though.
So you brought up a great point that I wanted to cover today. So Rhode Island is like number two or number four safest state in the country per capita.
Yeah.
Okay. So the reason why we have murders rising is because you have the gangs going on. They're moving all over the country. But most importantly, it's the Attorney General. It's the Attorney General's fault that murders are rising. And I'll tell you why. Because okay. Every year, so probably 5 years ago, we put in a bill that would require Well, we actually did it before the Rona. Peter Kilmartin was the Attorney General, and we put in a bill that would mandate that every year the Attorney General would submit a report to the House and the Senate of all the firearm cases that are closed or still in court or waiting for trial, all the disposition of the cases. So it got rewritten when the Rona got in. So when he submits this gun crimes report, it's so scrambled. But we have a couple of guys that have handled this and basically done all the research. And it takes them probably 4 months, and they got six guys on it. Because you have to go through every single case through the public portal and see what you can find out. And what we found out is he's around 80%, 75, 80%, sometimes 85% of dismissing the gun charges. So when he dismisses the gun charges, that means that they make a deal so they don't go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a lesser sentence and he's not charged with a felony. So now when you get, we've also found that a person can have three different gun charges that were dropped. Now, I'm not sure on this part of the law, but I think if you got convicted with one felony, a second felony, a third felony, I think it's automatic 20 years. It's a three strike rule.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we have that in Rhode Island or not, but still, if he keeps coming back and keeps getting charged, then sooner or later, he's going to spend some a lot of time in the prison. And that's the deterrent. You get caught with a firearm once. Okay. You get twice, three times. Yeah. You know, so he's letting these, he's downsizing the case, giving them the misdemeanor parts, not charging with the felonies. And then Johnny Gangbanger's back on the street for another gun charge.
Yeah.
And they know that it's just going to get dismissed because they don't want to go to trial. And that's what our problem is in Rhode Island, why we're having shootings. Because if he did that and he held them, and it's been proven where guys who have gotten caught and released have actually, like, either killed people or have harmed people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's our problem as far as what we got going on as far as murders and stuff like that in Rhode Island.
You know, and what you're describing, Michael, I mean, I think this is pretty well known to criminologists, and I think law enforcement too, right? I mean, there's a very small group of prolific offenders who are responsible for, I've seen one study indicating 63% of violent crime committed by less than 1% of the population. And if, again, if you focus on that cohort of individuals, right, and you say, we're not going to give you right. these sweetheart deals anymore. We're not giving you a break. If we catch you, we're going to send you away for as long as we possibly can. You're right. That's how you reduce violent crime. But that is the complete opposite approach of what we're right. seeing here in Rhode Island. Right. Let's right. cast this exactly. wide net of criminality over lawful gun owners. We'll turn them into criminals for exercising their Second Amendment rights. Now, maybe if they get caught, we'll offer them a plea deal, too. But I don't know about you, Michael. I don't want to have to go to court and have a felony charge reduced to a misdemeanor
nah.
because I possessed a 17-round magazine or because I
right.
Possessed an AR-15, right? That's absurd. Go after these violent offenders. Charge them, you know, again, just take them to court. Take them to trial. Get a conviction. But as you say, these plea deals that are happening, and this is not just happening in Rhode Island, unfortunately. You're right. They are allowing these repeat offenders to get out of jail, to avoid prison entirely. And again, what does that tell them, right? That there are no consequences
right.
for committing these violent crimes. So why wouldn't they go on and do it again?
Exactly. And what we've got going on in the country until Trump got in, look at all the gangbangers they knew that came across the border, like in Colorado. All the problems that they're having, that's going on through the whole country where they're being let go. And they know they have ties to gangs. And now they're wreaking havoc on the United States. And they're just catch and release, where the states are telling the police departments, like the progressive states, you know, like, mm-hmm. Let them go. Like, you know, we're not going to bother detaining them, because even though ICE has a detainer on them.
Right.
So, you know, that's why, you know, crime is up in the United States is because of that. And hopefully with this administration, you know, it gets tampered and it gets crushed.
Let's hope. And I hope that this bill gets crushed in the Senate. What is your advice? What is the Rhode Island Second Amendment Coalition telling its members and telling gun owners around the state to do right now? If the passage of the House or the bill in the House is a fait accompli, are you encouraging folks to reach out to their state senators? What should they be doing right now?
So we have probably four or five different organizations that we all work together. We have text messaging going out. We have radio ads going on now. So we're having everybody contact their senators and reps, staying on point. But right now we're concentrated on the senators and we'll see how the vote goes. We're actively looking for candidates, and this has been going on for a while now, where you voted against us, you were a gun person, you voted against us, and you voted for the gun bill, now you're going to get an opponent. So we're also disaffiliating. We have a disaffiliating campaign, which what that does is, if you're an independent, the last governor's race, we call him Governor Gump in Rhode Island, that it was a three-way race. He only won by 3,000 votes. So we have, I think we're up to around 10,000. I haven't seen the latest numbers, but if we go 15,000 disaffiliation voters, and we have all their contact information, and we sit there and say, you know, the governor's race, the lieutenant governor's race, the attorney general's race, this is who we should vote for, and we can go in on a three-way race, and we can get rid of the worst of the worst, because the numbers will be tight on a three-way race. It always is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, I saw that Governor McKee's approval rating is sitting at what, 19% right now?
Something like that. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, Michael, you know, it really is inspiring how many gun owners have turned out of the state house this year, last year too. You know, just that sea of yellow shirts. Folks defending their right to keep and bear arms. So I want to thank you, and I want to thank all of the Rhode Island gun owners for being so active and engaged in defense of their rights. I want to have you back because I want to talk about some of the litigation that the coalition and yourself has been involved in. But I also want to talk about what's going on, you know, as this bill moves over to the Senate. So can we maybe touch base again next week?
Sure.
Okay.
My pleasure.
Fantastic. And if folks want more information about the Rhode Island Second Amendment Coalition, how do they find you guys online?
So you can go to risecond.org, and that's our website. We're on Facebook also, Rhode Island Second Amendment Coalition. So you can find us there. Rhode Island Gun Rights, that's another organization, the Federated Sportsmen's Association, Rhode Island Rifle and Revolver. So we have like four organizations. We all work together. We're working hard. So our information is out there, and it's all over the place. So we got radio ads. We had a billboard running for a while. We're trying to, you know, get everybody aware of what's going on. So everybody's working pretty hard. So,
well, and again, I can tell you that that work is acknowledged and appreciated both in Rhode Island and outside the state as well. Michael O'Neill, I appreciate you taking a couple of minutes out of your day today to talk with us here on Bearing Arms Cam and Company. And I look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. My thanks to Michael for joining us on the program, and I'm looking forward to having him back again next week. I would contact your state senator if you are a Rhode Island gun owner who is watching this. And, you know, there's some inside baseball stuff going on. The head of the Rhode Island state, I guess, was the Senate president, passed away during this session. He was somebody who had been opposed to these types of gun bans in the past. He had said that he was open to moving this legislation this session. And then again, he passed away. You've got a Senate leadership election. Basically, the Senate president is the head of one of the state's biggest teachers unions, very much in favor of this gun ban. The Senate majority leader, the number two in the Senate, on the other hand, is an FFL, kind of a part-time FFL. He's not his full-time job, but he is opposed to this ban. And I believe the number three in the Senate, also a Democrat, is opposed to this ban. So The bill is scheduled to be heard by the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is believed to be basically split between supporters and opponents. So, you know, a deadlock there, right? There is a provision that allows Senate leadership to sit in on any committee and cast a vote, but that would be both Republican and Democrat leadership. And so if they do decide to do that, it looks like the bill would be killed off outright, as opposed to, you know, just being held in committee on a tie vote. So there are, I think, a distinct possibility that this bill can be defeated. There's also the possibility, however, that the Senate president will play some games here, maybe file a discharge petition to move the House bill directly to the Senate floor, bypassing committees altogether, maybe assigning the bill to a friendlier committee than the judiciary, even though that's where it should go. Again, you know, a lot of what is going to happen, I think, rests in the hands of the Senate president, but a lot of it also still rests in the hands of these individual senators. So that's why it is still incumbent on gun owners in Rhode Island to be reaching out to their state senators. I'd say particularly those on the Judiciary Committee, particularly Senate leadership, and to urge them to stand firm, to at least let this be a fair process. Because if it is a fair process, I think the bill doesn't get to Governor McKee's desk. And Governor McKee, by the way, is going to be twisting a lot of arms. Mentioned his 19% approval rating. He wants a win. And even though I think this would be completely detrimental to the interests of Rhode Islanders, he would see signing a gun ban bill into law as a political victory. So he's going to be pressuring the Senate president to do whatever needs to be done to get this bill to his desk. Gun control groups going to be doing the same thing. They want to see a win. You know, SB3 in Colorado got watered down. Their gun ban bill did not move forward in New Mexico, got defeated outright on the floor of the Hawaii Senate. So they need a victory, too. And Rhode Island is their best chance to pass a semi-auto ban this session. So they're going to be doing some lobbying. And that is why gun owners and Second Amendment advocates, we need to be making our voices heard as well. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with an incident out of Oregon where a Bend man accused of a mass stabbing spree at a homeless shelter in Salem, Oregon, has a long criminal history and a history of mental health issues as well. And yet, despite that lengthy criminal history, despite that history of mental health concerns, Tony Latrell Williams was out and about and able to engage in this stabbing spree, allegedly responsible for this stabbing spree. KTVZ, Channel 21 in Portland, says that Williams has a criminal record and history of mental health issues dating back at least 20 years in the state. 16 arrests, 9 of them in Deschutes County. Court records show that Williams appeared to have mental health issues, at one point being deemed mentally unfit for a court case to continue. He was placed in Sageview Psychiatric Center at St. Charles Bend. He's also undergone at least 3 mental health psychiatric evaluations, all connected, it seems, with these various criminal cases. In most cases, the mental health providers deemed him fit to continue on with these criminal cases. KTVZ says the first warning signs of Williams' mental health issues came in 2016 when he was arrested for menacing. A psychological evaluation found him unfit to proceed, so he was required to become an inpatient at the Sageview Psychiatric Center at St. Charles Bend Hospital. The TV station says it's not clear when and why he was released from the program, but by 2019, he was arrested again, pleaded guilty to bending back the fingers of a Bend police officer as they attempted to arrest him for stealing at a 7-Eleven. His attorney at the time said he believed that Williams was not taking his medication or following his therapy plan. He was arrested again in 2021 and 2022. One of the incidents was for resisting arrest with a knife. In 2023 and again in 2024, arrested at that same 7-Eleven in Bend, originally found unfit to proceed, but an outside evaluation then found that he was fit to proceed to trial. He pleaded guilty, was sent to jail for a brief period of time for those crimes. But KTVZ in Oregon says he was, he's been charged with assault in the third degree, assault in the fourth degree, harassment, attempt to commit murder, assault in the first degree, assault in the second degree. And, you know, many of these cases have been closed. We don't necessarily know the outcome of these cases based on public records. He does have, again, assault in the second degree, 12 charges, as well as attempt to commit murder. That's an open case in Marion County based on the stabbing spree that he allegedly engaged in. But plenty of opportunities for the criminal justice system and the mental health system, frankly, to deal with Tony Latrell Williams. And it appears that, in particular, the criminal justice system has failed to keep a repeat prolific offender behind bars for any significant period of time, instead continually returning him to the streets. And this sort of, you know, catch and release cycle, right, where he commits a crime, gets arrested, mental health evaluations performed. Sometimes, yes, he's fit to stand trial. Sometimes, no, he's not. But then plea deals are offered. Most serious charges are reduced. He's out, a free man, and he goes on to commit these other offenses. It doesn't have to be this way. But, you know, as we were talking with Michael O'Neill, all too often, that is, in fact, the pattern, not just in Rhode Island, but in courts across the country. Now, today's Armed Citizen story from Monroe County, Alabama, where the sheriff's office says a homeowner shot an axe-wielding intruder. I had to check, make sure this wasn't an old story, because we had a defensive gun use, I believe it was last week, involving a axe-wielding intruder. But that was in North Carolina. This, again, Monroe County, Monroe County, Alabama. And it happened earlier this week, June the 3rd. The Monroe County Sheriff's Office says they were called to a home in the Eureka Landing community around 2:40 on the morning of June 3rd for a report of a break-in. When deputies got there, they found the homeowner, who said that he had shot the suspect in the torso in self-defense. Deputies say they were able to find the suspect behind the home with a gunshot wound. He was taken to a local hospital. The sheriff there says the homeowner not expected to face charges because they, again, were acting in self-defense. So, we'll give you more information if and when it becomes available. But on to today's Armed Citizens, good deed of the day from Edison, New Jersey, where a good Samaritan able to pull a driver from a burning car after it crashed there in the township. There is a picture taken of the scene of the car in question. I mean, you can see fully engulfed in flames. So this was a terrifying situation for the driver, and I'm sure for a lot of bystanders as well. Charles Perry was actually at a gas station. He was waiting to fill up when he saw another driver crash into a sign along a Route 27 in Edison, jumped out of his car, ran towards the wreck. He could already see the flames coming out from under the hood of the car. He said as he was heading towards the side of this PetSmart wall, maybe from the jump it made him veer left, he just took a sharp left turn, went right towards the sign, hit the concrete foundation. The flames apparently so intense that they burned a billboard. And Perry said when he got there, he said the door opened, but he was strapped in. He said, so I was struggling with that seatbelt. That was my biggest fear. He said, smoke's hitting me, the flames coming out of the hood of the car because it was crunched up and you could see into the engine compartment. But Perry was able to successfully extricate the driver there, got him out before police and emergency crews even arrived. Authorities say the driver had suffered in a medical emergency and lost control of his vehicle. Mr. Perry says, you know, it could have been somebody in my family, and I would have hoped that somebody would have done that for them. Well, hopefully Charles Perry doesn't have to deal with anything like this in his family, but in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need, we certainly appreciate his very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. We'll be back with another episode on Monday. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Between now and then, we're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Myself, Tom Knighton, John Petrolino's got some stories that he's working on as well. We've got some interesting legal developments that will be coming up in the next couple of days. And, of course, you know, we are still in the midst of legislative sessions around the country. We've got some good news to report out of Nevada today, but there is some concerning bills in a lot of states, so you need to be paying attention to what's going on. All right. Have a great rest of your day. Have a good weekend. Until we talk again, be well. Be safe. And
be free.